This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Tuesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Jennifer Kuiper. We have 32 degrees under cloudy skies. We're going up to 34 degrees this afternoon. Coming up on today's Noon Business Hour, the coronavirus and possible repercussions for the U.S. economy. On the report front, we'll talk about durable and capital goods orders and consumer confidence. And home prices in Chicago remain flat.
Right now, the spread of the deadly coronavirus having a direct impact on the Chinese economy, it could eventually have an effect on the U.S. We're joined by Andrew Bush, an economist and author of the book World Event Trading. He is based here in Chicago. Andy, when we talk about the Chinese economy, we're talking about an economy that was already slumping, and now you throw this into the mix.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the more problematic areas for global growth. I mean, if you were looking at estimates from, say, the World Bank, which came out recently and said that, you know, they were expecting, I think, 3.7% growth in GDP globally for 2020, you might as well eliminate the 0.2 or 0.3% added on to that they thought they were going to get in growth, because China is not going to grow if this is going on. And we still don't really have good numbers coming out of China, what actually is happening there. I know the markets are rallying today. I know that there was some good economic news. And I know that the U.S. CDC and others have said, you know, it's not a risk for the United States. But to be honest, they really don't know that. They're guessing right now. It's a coronavirus. It could mutate. There's a lot of things that are going on with it. And what I would tell people to watch out for is how rapidly the number of cases start to pile on. In other words, how fast, what percentage are increasing? And so far in China, from what we know, assuming these numbers are right, they're increasing almost within 24 hours of about 50%. So we're nowhere near the peak of this virus yet.
Now, if you are thinking about the impact on the markets here of the coronavirus and what's going on in the Chinese economy, are you thinking like a trader? Because it seems like there's only going to be a short-term impact, and at some point when this is all over, everything sort of goes back to normal.
Yeah, you know, in the book that I wrote, World Event Trading, I did a whole section, you know, several chapters on infectious diseases. So having researched this, and if we use SARS as an example, you know, it peaked after about 4 months. And as that was going on, there was a lot of uncertainty, clearly, you know. So, entertainment companies, movie theaters got hit, anything with transportation got hit, airlines, travel like cruise ships, you know, that got hit as well. But companies that, obviously manufacture a lot of things in China are also getting called into question, Apple being one of them. They wanted to ramp up iPhone production by about 10% in 2020. That's being called into question because this is literally shutting down the country there. So looking at this holistically, like, yes, there's opportunities. And the way that you look at it is this. If there was a negative impact, or if there was a company that was weak anyway, and they're going to be impacted by this, this is accelerating that to the downside. If there's a company that was really strong and maybe it's temporarily getting thrown in with the rest of these companies, that'll get negatively impacted, but you want to take a look at maybe buying that on a dip. I guess my point is this, is that there's a lot of moving parts to this right now. I'm not sure you can blow the all clear and everything's great signal just yet.
Andrew Bush, economist and author of the book World Event Trading. Thanks for joining us. Coming up, a check of how consumers are feeling about the economy and an update on the stagnant Chicago real estate market. A couple of closely watched economic reports are out today, including the latest look at home prices. We are joined by Diane Swonk, chief economist, Grant Thornton here in Chicago. And Diane, what is the latest on consumer confidence?
Well, consumer confidence bounced back to its highest level since August and January, which is great news. And the big improvement in the consumer confidence numbers was really driven by an improvement in the labor market conditions. Not only were people who thought the labor market was sort of easy to get a job, then that percentage improved, but also those people who thought it was hard to find a job fell. So that's good news out there to start the year on this high note, but underscores a dissonance we're still continuing to hear between consumers and CEOs, which are still more cautious about the U.S. economy. And we saw that in the durable goods data as well today. That was not as good as the consumers. So consumers are out there carrying this economy, but we're seeing that actually the orders being placed and investment in this economy, business investment going forward, is still very weak.
There has been some indication that there has been wage growth, but is it enough for consumers? Are they still worried about that?
Wage growth is something that has been mixed. The low end, the bottom 25% of wage earners have seen very rapid wage growth in the last couple of years. But more recently, we've seen that tempered by a slowdown further up the food chain. So many people are seeing that they're in low-wage jobs getting some bigger raises, some of it on the heels of minimum wage, also in response to very tight labor market conditions. That's great news. But remember, many of those people who are at the low end of the wage scale were once in the middle of the income strata, and that's still being hollowed out.
So, Diane, we have home prices in general rising, but kind of flattening out here in Chicago.
Yeah, what we have is really short supplies, tight supplies in the housing market. And the good news is that low mortgage rates reopen the door to first-time buyers out there, and they really do want to buy. Millennials have the same hopes and dreams as everybody else. They're not aliens. They want to buy home, too. They've delayed it longer than other people out there because they had bad economic situations. Now they're able to finally buy, but there's not enough homes on the market to buy in many markets. Chicago was an outlier in that we're seeing home prices, we think, overall, this next year are going to, in the first half of the year anyways, really continue to pick up because of those shortages in supply. We just don't have enough entry-level homes for people to buy right now, and that's causing bidding wars on some properties.
Do we have any idea why the short supply? Is this still kind of a residual from the crash?
You know, it is. It's a residual of the crash. It's residual because a lot of people didn't put money into their homes in the wake of the crash. So you had a lot of dilapidated housing. You had foreclosures that were taken off. You also had widespread consolidation among builders. So we don't have as many builders as we once did. And they're not as willing to do speculative building like they once did on that entry-level property, which they overbuilt in the past. Those guys are gone. And so they're timing the market much more carefully than they once did. But that means less supply. In fact, some estimates are that we're at the lowest supply we've been since the 1980s, and in many ways it could take years to replenish the supply. That assumes, of course, we don't go into another recession anytime soon.
So we're seeing the inventories dropping still at the entry level. What about the higher priced houses? Are they sitting there longer? Are they moving at all?
Yeah, it really is a bifurcated market. The higher priced houses are not doing as well. And so you're really seeing that much of the demand is in this entry level market, less in the trade up market. There is some millennials who waited longer who can afford a little bit more, which is great. And they're older now and they've saved a little bit and they're getting past some of their student debt. That's all good news. But there is, you know, the older baby boomers, what we're also seeing is they're aging in place. They don't want to give up the homes they have, which is keeping the constraints on that entry level that someone might remodel and bring it up to an entry level, but it's much harder to get rid of the $1 million plus homes.
Thank you so much, Diane Swonk, chief economist at Grant Thornton here in Chicago.
Up next, a leading fast food chain pushes chicken for breakfast.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Chicago-based McDonald's making a big push with chicken on its breakfast menu. Let's learn more about it. RJ Hotovy, consumer equity strategist at Morningstar here in Chicago. RJ, kind of give us a thumbnail. What's McDonald's doing?
Yeah, there's really two reasons for this, and what they're doing is introducing two chicken-based products, a chicken McGriddle product and a chicken biscuit product for the breakfast sandwiches. This is something actually they had in the Chicago market. They tested it and saw pretty good success with it, and now they're going to do a nationwide launch. They're pitching it as a limited-time offer, but franchisees have the ability to keep it on the menu longer than that. Really, the two reasons why they're doing this is, one, it's gotten a lot more competitive in the breakfast front, number of competitors entering the space, and more particularly, we're seeing a lot more chicken innovation with players like Chick-fil-A and White Castle, and Wendy's introducing chicken-based breakfast products. But this is also something the franchisees have been asking for, right now, I think innovation is key, and giving something the franchisees can add to the breakfast menu is important for this company.
And I mean, just seeing we love chicken, right? I mean, anytime, day or night, it seems like people have an appetite for it.
It is. It's something that it works, and we're finding that it works at all parts, all parts of the day here. And so I think that that's something we're seeing. You know, it's also one that we've seen some commodity prices increases on the beef front too. So it's, I think, a way to compete with that as well, or at least adjust to that.
Who is tops right now when it comes to the breakfast chicken sandwiches?
Well, in terms of the breakfast chicken sandwiches, I think Chick-fil-A is a clear number one, given that it is the core to their menu. But, you know, what we're seeing is that a lot of players have moved into this. Now, in terms of overall breakfast, McDonald's is still the number one player, but they have faced a lot more competition. In terms of some of the improvements they've seen from their technology initiatives, they had set up until this past quarter that the breakfast was an area that lagged. And some of that due to innovation, but also some of that due to value-based products that we're seeing out there in the market as well. And so I think this is a product that generally can work on the value menu at breakfast, and something that really is easy for franchisees to accommodate and put on their menu as well. So a lot of benefits to this, and I think it's something that will help out. And what could be a big product year for this company, in addition to breakfast chicken sandwiches, I think we'll see the launch of a nationwide premium chicken sandwich sometime this year, and potentially a plant-based offering too, something that, you know, McDonald's has not really participated in, and arguably two of the biggest menu trends in 2019 among quick service restaurants.
RJ, can you make a recommendation on the stock?
We have a $220 fair value estimate, so we do see some upside from here. We do think there's a number of catalysts in this in the year ahead, between the menu innovations I talked about, but some of the technology improvements they've made. And it's also a pretty healthy capital allocation story as well.
Thanks so much. Good analysis, RJ Hottovy, consumer equity strategist at Morningstar. Just ahead, Travel Tuesday, celebrating National Plan Your Vacation Day.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Jennifer Kuiper. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
In Travel Tuesday, we'll explore how the coronavirus is impacting the movement of people in China and all around the globe.
And also on the travel front, using this National Plan Your Vacation Day to put together a trip.
Wisconsin-based Harley Davidson is trying to go through a rough patch of road.
Former state senator Martin Sandoval pleads guilty to bribery and tax-related charges under an agreement made with federal prosecutors.
Wall Street, the Dow up 214 points. NASDAQ is up 120. S&P up 32. And oil is up right about a third of a percent.
AccuWeather says the rest of today overcast and cold with a couple of flurries and spotty drizzle that can freeze on surfaces early. A high 34. 32 degrees at O'Hare, Midway, and the Lakefront.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by Republic Bank of Chicago.
Shares of Harley-Davidson are taking a hit as motorcycle sales continue to slide. Let's discuss the plight of the Milwaukee-headquartered company with Garrett Nelson, Senior Equity Analyst, CFRA Research. Garrett, what is going on with Harley-Davidson? What's the problem here?
Sure. Thanks for having me. So the problem is really the problem that they've been facing for many years now. If you look at the quarter, what they reported was about 2 cents short of street expectations, and it was driven by a weaker top line. So the revenue was down 8.5% year over year, and that was really driven by the 7% drop in motorcycle shipments versus a year ago. But this is something they've been battling for a long time. If you look, Harley-Davidson's motorcycle sales peaked way back in 2006. That year they sold about 350,000 motorcycles. This past year, they sold only 218,000. That's about a 38% drop in their annual sales, and that's what really was the driver of the shortfall for the quarter.
But interestingly, sales are down here in the States, but they are way up in Asia.
That's right. So that's part of their strategy, is attempting to offset weakness in the U.S. by growing in other markets such as Asia. So, they're going to continue down that path, and they've only been so successful with doing that. The reality is most of their bikes are sold in the United States market. So, but that's part of their strategy.
So the stock right now, 33.70, down about 3.25% today. You have a recommendation on the stock?
So we actually raised our rating from a sell. We've had a sell for a long time to a hold this morning. We think the valuation is a lot more fair. Whereas before it was overvalued and not fully accounting for the headwinds that the company is facing. But, you know, the guidance that they provided for 2020 implies a flattish revenue, but a slight increase in their operating margin. So we think they're going to face less headwinds in 2020 from the tariff specifically, which has hurt the company quite materially.
Thanks for all the analysis, Garrett Nelson. Garrett is Senior Equity Analyst at CFRA Research.
And now we take a look at the markets, and we're joined by John Beaver, President of Phase 3 Advisory Services and Registered Principal with Royal Alliance Associates in Buffalo Grove. And John, what do you make of what you're seeing on the markets today?
Well, Jennifer, today buying is back in vogue after yesterday's sell-off, so we do have this bounce. Partly due to some earnings announcements, positive from HCA Healthcare and United Technologies, some excitement over what might be coming from Apple and Advanced Micro Devices. We have 3M on the downside, but it's not enough to pull the Dow down or pull the market down. And really what we have here is a snapback rally from yesterday's steep sell-off. Yesterday's sell-off was on higher volume. Today's rally is on lower volume, so the rally is suspect at this point in time.
You mentioned earnings. Anything that you found surprising among those reporting?
No, nothing really surprising. 3M once again had a didn't beat 10th time over the last 3 years, so it's kind of an interesting season. We're dealing right now with what we have in our temperature in Chicago right now, hovering right at 32 degrees. We're not really cooling off anymore. We're not getting hot. Last year's earnings were really flat. We're down maybe 1.9% at the worst end. We might be down 1.5% by the time this season is over. And so what we're really doing is we're looking forward to this next year. What is 2020 going to be? It does look like there will be an increase in earnings, but it's really quite a wide range between 5 and 10% on consensus of where the earnings will be. And that's really the critical thing now. So the market's probably going to struggle with this level at this point in time.
So yesterday's sell-off was blamed mostly on uncertainty over the coronavirus and exactly what's going to go on. Do you see that as what's behind it? And the reason I'm asking is because we've had several analysts say we've been due for some sort of a pullback for a while now.
Yeah, so the market has definitely been vulnerable to a pullback. We've had a really nice run. Last year's rally was entirely multiple expansion. As I mentioned, no increase in earnings. So if the market goes up, you got multiple expansion, and it was a nice rally. So the market was vulnerable. Coronavirus just happened to be the trigger. And as your earlier guest, Andrew Bush, mentioned, historically, the impact from these viral outbreaks tends to be limited in time and in scope, so we'll have to see on this one.
Now, I know,
today,
you know,
good, yeah,
well, I was going to say, we're not traders, we're investors, of course, but does a sell-off like that create any opportunities?
Yeah, it does, but not yet, because, again, the valuations are on the high side, so I'd be looking for something else. Today's durable good orders were just so-so. It was positive, but mostly due to military spending, and consumer confidence is very strong, but the consumer is carrying this market on its back, and that we eventually have to get business coming to the party and participating in this. So I would wait to be a buyer at this point in time.
This week, what should we expect on the economic front, and is there something we should be paying special attention to?
So what I would watch is I would watch what's going on with volume every day, because that's really going to give a clue. If you haven't rebalanced, this is a great time to rebalance. And if you have some profits there that you haven't snagged, I would snag those profits and get some money on the sideline, and I would really watch for a pullback. And where the surprise is going to come from, don't know. Is it going to come from the coronavirus? Is it going to come from the Fed? We are expecting no action from the Fed this week. I would be patient at this point in time and let the market come to you. On average, every year, the market puts in about a 10% pullback some point in time in the year. So I would be patient at this point in time. I don't know what the trigger will be that will give us that buying opportunity.
Always good to have your take on things. Thank you, John Beaver, President of Phase 3 Advisory Services, also Registered Principal with Royal Alliance Associates.
Up next in Travel Tuesday, why this is a perfect day to plan a trip.
Making sense of your dollars. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday on the Noon Business Hour. And just in case you didn't know, today is National Plan Your Vacation Day. Let's celebrate it with someone who always has travel top of mind, Cindy Richards, editor-in-chief of TravelingMom.com, based here in Chicago. Cindy, I'm sure it is always an exciting day because you're someone who really does love to travel.
Oh, I do. And you know what always amazes me is when you see these studies about the number of people who don't take all their vacation days. I just think that's a crime. And, you know, for a lot of reasons, not just because people need to get away, but you know, your boss should want you to go once in a while because presumably you've had a great time and you come back refreshed and ready to work, right?
Yeah, I'm one of those people who literally takes every second of available vacation. I don't
Me
leave,
too.
Yeah, I don't leave anything on the table. All right, so advice for people who are like me and don't leave any second of vacation on the table. What should they start doing if they are indeed planning a vacation today?
Well, so there's a couple things I want to say first. You know, some people get really like worked up about this whole planning thing. I've got to make it perfect. Well, you know, here's the secret. It's not going to be perfect, right? Your life's not perfect. Your vacation's not going to be perfect. Things are going to go wrong. It's, you know, there's going to be a pile up at work right before you have to leave. Things are going to happen. Just go anyway. I'm all about just go. And it doesn't have to be a huge trip. You don't have to plan like an around the world cruise, right? You can take a couple of days and, you know, go somewhere local. You know, the last time I was on, we talked about places you could go almost day trips, right? South Bend, Indiana, or Madison, Wisconsin. So it doesn't have to be huge. We have to figure out is where is it? What do you love to do, right? Do you like, are you a beach person like me? Are you a snow person, which I don't understand, but some people are. You know, what would you really like to do if you're going to go somewhere? Once you figure that out, then the rest of it starts to fall into place.
Any deals you're seeing in the shoulder season?
There's always great deals in the shoulder season. So if you want to go right now, yeah, you want to look on deal sites. There's some great ones like Travelzoo is actually my favorite. You can get on their email list and they'll send stuff to you every week and they're amazing. You know, like $500 for a couple of days at an all-inclusive resort in the Caribbean. Sometimes it even includes airfare.
So you would suggest, it sounds like you mentioned just go, you know, do something. It doesn't have to be perfect. In that sense, you don't necessarily have to wait until you can save up for that around the world adventure because that may never happen and it may take you years to save up for that.
Right. And just, I mean, think about you. If you were doing that, you'd have to, you know, you would have all your vacation would be wrapped up in one trip. And I think that's a mistake. I think you should go to a lot of different places, but it's up to you, right? Everybody has their own goals of what they want to do. I think once you figure out what you want to do some research. You want to go to sites like travelingmom.com, my site, you know, and look at and see writers that have gone to that place with kids your age or without kids or whatever. We would talk, you know, tell you what it is you need to think about before you go, give you some tips for going there. And then, you know, I mean, if you do want to plan a huge trip and, you know, more power to you, if you want to go around the world and you need somebody, you know, in the cabin with you, give me a call. I'm ready. And then you probably want to get some help, right? That's when you want to call in a travel agent. If you're going to do a really complicated trip, I mean, you know, you can look things up on the internet and you can do a lot of planning on your own. But if you're going to do something like a cruise and not even around the world, but just even a cruise, because there's different levels of cabins, there's different itineraries, there's a bunch of different ships, or a trip to Disney. Disney's a very complicated vacation destination. It's really best to call in a travel agent who's an expert because they know how to do it. They might even get you a better deal for what it is you want to do.
And any suggestions for the extended family vacations? And by that, I mean grandma and grandpa join along and it's all the kids and grandkids. And do you think, are there some things that work better than others?
Absolutely. And I, you know, my family, we do that trip and we always find some kind of an all-inclusive. So it could be a cruise ship. It could be an all-inclusive resort in Mexico. And the reason we do that is because, A, it's all included, right? So the rich uncle doesn't feel like he has to buy for everybody and all that. So you know what going in, how much it's going to be. And there's a ton of different things to do aimed at different age groups. You know, grandma can still go take a nap in the afternoon and while the kids are on the beach or at the kids club, and you all come together for dinner and you reconnect without feeling like you're all having the same vacation.
Thanks so much, Cindy Richards, editor-in-chief of the website TravelingMom.com.
Join us at this time tomorrow for Personal Finance Wednesday and still to come, gauging the impact of the coronavirus on travel.
Money conversation that pays a big dividend. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The U.S. government is expanding its health screening from 5 to 20 airports to check passengers from China for the coronavirus. We're joined by Ken Goldstein, president, KJG International Consulting. Ken, what are the airlines doing as concerns about coronavirus continue?
Well, first off, thanks for having me on, Jennifer. The airlines, and let's start with the hometown airline, United. United is offering refunds to passengers traveling to Wuhan if they bought their tickets by January 21st and expect to travel there between now and March 29th. Additionally, United, American, and Delta have extended waivers to change fees on flights to Beijing, Shanghai, or Chengdu, which is United's case. through the end of February, which is an increase since the other, previously, which they had done through January. One thing which is important to know, it's United. United is suspending some flights to China starting February 1st, saying demand has dropped due to the virus, and the air carriers, United that is, has added suspensions to about a week on this. So those are the most important things. I think other thing we should take notice of, and this is not to make panic or anything, but the dead that the Chinese government is saying was 81 yesterday, they're now reporting 106. And additionally, the cases on Monday was 2,835. They're now saying it's 4,515. This according to the New York Times. So this is a major thing. Fortunately, here in the United States, and particularly Chicago, we've had one instance among the five in the United States. We catch the people, of course, as they come in, and we're testing. And O'Hare is, of course, a testing place or checking point, which have now, as you said, they've now increased to 20.
Well, let me ask you about that. Those health screenings, do you know what we're asked or what they do in those health screenings?
In the health screenings, basically, you're checking temperature, see if they have the virus. Obviously, you can't always do it because that's where the more extensive test, and I'm not a doctor, so I'm not going to even go there, but the MRI and things like this. The problem that they've had in China, which is an impact for us, although we're far more prepared, they don't have enough of the diagnostic kits, which we are now starting to send them. For example, FedEx is taking things over there. Just as a sidebar, the United States, the government, has a charter flight leaving Wuhan tomorrow, Wednesday, their time. It'll be coming into the United States, stopping at Anchorage for refueling, and of course they're going to screen the passengers when they get off in Ontario, California.
Thanks so much. Good insight, as always. Ken Goldstein, he is president of KJG International Consulting here in Chicago. You'll find past programs later today, a podcast of this hour, at our website, WBBMNewsRadio.com, and the Radio.com app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.